Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right. I'm really excited to share this episode with you. There's just so much that can be taken away from this episode. It's an interview with Maria Aguila, who is an immigration and family law attorney out of Jacksonville, Florida, one of our providers. And one of the common challenges that a lot of our attorneys that we work with have is, you know, when we're doing lead generation for them, we're bringing them all kinds of new clients, is this is all new business and they have to find a way to serve this higher volume of clients than they've been used to serving. And right off the bat, one of the things that we talk about with Maria is the ways in which she's brought on contract lawyers to work with her in a supportive role. We've had other attorneys that have hired contract lawyers to handle entire cases, and they do kind of a fee split, and there's some things that they've done to make that work. But Maria actually hires contract lawyers to assist her with drafting and performing some of the legal work that she does. And so again, it's in more of a supportive role. And she talks about how that's different and how she bills for that and really breaks that down. So attorneys that maybe feeling the pressure of handling, having too much business or getting to the brink of the point where they maybe can't handle it all themselves, this is a real nuts and bolts way of unpacking of how you can start to bring on or think about bringing on contract lawyers to support you. And then she also breaks down the different types of unbundled options that she offers, how she explains it to her clients for both immigration and family law, and does a comparison of both. And I think the options she offers really have a common thread of empathy, and everything that she does really she tries to put herself in the shoes of her clients and figure out ways in which she can work around their needs and give them where they're at financially and the amount of stresses they have on their hands. So she's having a lot of success, even just 6 months out from relaunching her practice, even though she's got a lot of experience, but, you know, brings a lot of that 18 years of law practice experience that she's had, you know, to this new launch of her practice. And there's just so much to take away as a result. So let's just get right into it. This interview with Maria Aguila, one of our provider attorneys out of Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Maria, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really glad we're getting a chance to catch up. It's been a fun 6 months so far, and really looking forward to unpacking how it's all gone. And I appreciate you taking the time to share the story. And
sure. I'd be more than happy to kind of share my experience and how it's been really, really building my business.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe, Maria, I guess a good place to start was, you know, I understand you were kind of just getting things going in your new practice. Maybe you could just share, I guess, the genesis story of your practice, where you serve and the focus areas of law as well.
Right. Well, I was working for the state of Florida. I was working before I opened my practice. But before that, I had my practice I kind of had a long history. I've been an attorney for 18 years. So I was in a private law firm. I worked at Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. I've worked for the state of Florida. I opened my own practice and then went back to the government and now back to my practice. And this is where I'd like to stay for now. And I practice immigration law, family law, and international adoptions. And here and there, I do some landlord-tenant cases because I have experience in landlord-tenant and fair housing. When I was a Jacksonville Area Legal Aid attorney, and I have training in that as well. So since I started, when I reopened my practice, I think it was end of October, early November, I got a phone call from Graham. And he kind of, you know, and you get a lot of marketing calls, you know, when you open your own law firm. And, but this one really piqued my interest because, you know, it was a different type of lead generation service. And I really liked the different podcasts that I had heard about that Graham pointed me towards, and I listened to those and I thought, my gosh, this could be it, because I had been debating in my mind, how am I going to structure this? I had experience from the first go round with my practice. And when I first had my practice, all I was doing was exclusively immigration law. But this time around, I had expanded it to family law and international adoptions, doing more of those. And hoping to develop that area. So I didn't know, I thought I wanted to take a different approach to marketing and to getting leads out there, and never really used the service before, never really advertised heavily. And since I started, it kind of fell in my lap, and I just signed up, said, why not? I'll give it a try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Well, it worked, and then some. The first 2 weeks, signed up, I think about around 60-70% first go round of the first few, the leads I got in that first month, I would say, even the first 2 weeks. In fact, the numbers might be higher than that. It might be 80 or 90. And then as it continued to grow, and, you know, during the holidays, I kind of opened at an odd time where, you know, a lot of people are busy during the holidays and in the fall. But come January, things really started to pick up even more so. And I was finding myself needing to sign a lease at an office location. I was using a co-work space and already was looking at space for lease. And I ended up adding two contract attorneys, one for immigration, one for family law. One is was in Seattle, actually, Washington. And she ended up doing such a great job for me. She got hired by some big law firm doing immigration law. And then I ended up with the contract attorney I have. She's out in Colorado and used to practice in the Northeast Florida area. And she helps me meet my deadlines and draft my family law petition so we don't get too, you know, behind, and make sure the clients are happy and get the stuff filed in court in a timely manner. And then I have my part-time assistant here on Tuesday, Thursdays. Right now he's a contractor, and he has about 9 years of immigration law experience and working a lot with refugees and doing naturalization and becoming a U.S. citizen is what that means. And he's been fantastic. He's here today, but it's Thursday, and he's getting a lot of work done for me while I'm on the phone talking to clients, you know, arranging meetings, getting stuff done for the clients. Well, he kind of does a lot of the drafting and the organizing and cover letters and those kind of things. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, cool. So there's a lot of things we can unpack there. Maybe we can walk us through a little bit. For those that don't know what a co-working space is, what that looked like, I think it's all constantly commonly referred to as a virtual office. Maybe you can share, you know, how you're using that space, and then, you know, what made you make that transition. Obviously, if, you know, you get to a certain amount of volume, you have the, you know, you have a need to have a full-time office, but maybe just briefly share what that looked like.
Sure. Yeah, and what's great, a lot of these cities have it in Jacksonville, Florida, is just starting to really offer co-working space. Essentially, virtual office, what that is, it's, you know, you do a lot, you may work out of your home. A lot of people may start out that way. But what's great about a virtual office or co-work space is that whenever you need it to meet with clients and you have a place where you can receive your mail, it has the professional appearance of an office space. You meet them in a nice conference room. My building here, before I signed the lease, had a really nice kitchen lobby area. They had a receptionist welcome you. They sign in by iPad. It's very super modern, super sleek. It's a brand new renovated building. And so when they come in, they're very impressed, and you have a nice meeting space for them. And then when our meeting was over and they retained me, I'm able to go right in my laptop in the co-work space, which is like a communal shared space that has all the Wi-Fi and connection, and you can just get into your work right then and there. And my phone goes everywhere with me, so my office line is mobile. Everything is, it's a mobile office. And that worked out for a while, a month or so, and then I started a few months. I signed up, I think it was the end of November, early December, and then signed a lease in March. In a couple of months, I realized I was using so much conference room space and was here all the time that I really just needed the lease space. And so I morphed in a few months from being a co-work virtual office to a traditional lease tenant. With my package here is great because they offer free internet and a lot of great amenities. I have, you know, 6 hours of conference room space when I do need it. They can meet in my office, or we can meet in a nice conference room. Sometimes you have a lot of people Let's say a conference, a meeting with the client has three family members because it's an immigration case, let's say. Well, they're all here. It's kind of cramped if I try to cram them all in my office. So I like to use the conference room space for that. And it's impressive to the client, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I really like to do, Maria, or at least what's coming to mind is, you know, this has really been, you know, a launch of a new soul practice. I know you mentioned that you've been in practice before in the past, but you really just kind of got the doors opened up here at the end of October, November, beginning of November. And that's right when we started working together. And there's a certain phase of kind of growth that has to happen where you've, you know, eventually had to bring on contract lawyers and get a new space. And this is a common challenge for a lot of solo practitioners. Certainly a lot of attorneys that work with us when, day one or, you know, for the first week or two, they're all of a sudden starting to get an influx of new clients that they didn't have before. And so they have to make this adaptation or go through this adaptation growth process to make sure they can meet the new demand of all the leads. So what I'd love to do is just kind of unpack those phases and, you know, maybe, you know, the first week, first month, first 2 months, what the initial challenges you were having. Obviously, you had a bunch more clients coming in. You're like, okay, you were doing maybe all of it yourself for a little while, but then you started realizing you're getting overburdened. So can you just walk us through that and unpack that process, maybe from the first couple of weeks to then the next couple of months and how you had to, you know, adapt. And then we can maybe even get into some of the specifics on how you hired those lawyers, how you sourced them, whether they're friends and so forth from there.
Yeah. Right. Well, when I opened my practice, I started out working out of the house. I was using Google Voice. So all the phone calls, go through to my cell phone, my iPhone, and I was working out of the house, so I kept the client phone call. I started out with just putting my name. My website was put up. I went ahead and started putting myself out on Alvo and, you know, just a free lawyer listing website. And, you know, some business was trickling in, and some of my old clients from before found out I had reopened and called me immediately. So within a few days, I had my clients coming back to me, and I said, you know, it was interesting. Like, were you waiting for me this whole time? And they're like, well, yeah, we didn't want anyone else. And I was like, well, that's interesting. You could have filed your citizenship back then, but it was fun because I had taken care of a lot of these clients for a while. And so I started out that way. And then when Graham called me, and then I started getting a lot of phone calls, you know, and working those leads, calling them back, you know, getting their information, setting up the meetings. And then I found myself not only handling all those calls, meeting with them, and then doing the actual work itself. And then I was up late at night, opening files, and I started to learn about all the automated options out there that weren't available, I think, years ago. If it was available, I wasn't aware of them. But, like, for instance, like, I use MyCase, which is, I know, and Clio is another similar software, case management software. I started using LawPay almost immediately, which has been amazing because clients on payment plans are paying through my website, through the LawPay link. That's been really, really great because it automatically takes care of payments for me, especially those on payment plans. So I started going from virtual office to co-work space, handling all those calls, working late at night, automating everything, but realizing even with that, I still needed the help. I had a friend who ended up, needing work. She has children and was looking for some work out of the house kind of thing, and we're friends, and I knew she had some immigration law experience and was really interested in it. So I brought her on as a contract attorney almost after November. Maybe I brought her on December, end of November. She started drafting stuff because I needed someone to start drafting and working on cases while I was busy dealing with the leads and meeting with clients, signing up the new clients. So she was working on those cases. And then what's great is in my case, I gave them access. The file is digital, so anywhere you go and from any internet access, they can, you know, have access to the digital file. And then the other contract attorney I brought on kind of fell in my lap through a mutual friend, and she was practicing family law for a long time here, and I knew her already. And she had moved through her husband's job to Colorado. But she didn't want to get licensed in that state bar because she was already Florida bar licensed, didn't want to have to go through all those hoops. she wanted to then start doing contract work for other lawyers. So I brought her on, and what's great is she can get that work done while, again, I'm busy in court or in meetings or so on, and then I get to review everything, tweak it for the client if need be, and or she does it for me. And then on top of that, I had, before I had Sony, my assistant working with me Tuesday, Thursdays, another, actually she's related to me to some extent by marriage. She had worked with law firms. She's in Singapore. So when I'm asleep, she's working. So when I get up in the morning, the forms are done. And so it's interesting. None of the people so far, except for Stoney, have physically been in my office, but they do the same exact kind of work.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to press pause there for just a second. So first, it sounds like what you were hiring the contract lawyers for was for the legal work, the drafting and assisting mm-hmm. with the preparation. Was this for immigration or family law or both? Or were you really hiring, are these contract lawyers just for immigration side?
They're for both. In fact, they were, one contract attorney was for immigration to help me draft the actual forms and complete the forms. And then the other contract attorney is for family law, and she drafts all of my different family law documents, they're either paid by document or by the hour. And what's great is it's only on an as-needed basis. So I just tell them the project, they get it done, and then they invoice me on the 15th and the 30th of the month, or they invoice me once a month, however they want to invoice.
Can you share roughly what you might charge, or give some examples of what they may charge you to draft up documents, if it's by the document, or what they may be billing by the hour, just so attorneys get some idea of, you know, how they might be able to structure this type of relationship?
Sure. Well, my contract attorney who did the immigration work, and this was before she got hired at the law firm, she got a great job. She got the immigration law experience, but she was being paid about $35 a document because she was kind of brand new to it. And I was kind of training her on that. And then, or she would be paid hourly, about $10 an hour. The other contract attorney, she gets paid about $45 per document. So let's say I need a petition for dissolution of marriage and the affidavits that go with it and so on, she would just charge per document and just invoice that. And then, of course, you know, there's different rates. For her, she's more experienced. So if I paid her hourly, it can be anywhere from, you know, depending on the complexity, 15 an hour. Sometimes some contract attorneys are as high as 25 or 35. But I haven't been paying that. I've been paying a lot of times per document.
Okay. And so how do you interface with your you mentioned that none of these attorneys are working within your office, but with the exception of the assistant right. that you've now brought on board that comes in Tuesdays mm-hmm. and Thursdays, but or maybe I got that wrong. But for the majority, they're not coming in the office. So can
correct.
You talk about how you interface, whether it be digitally or if you're using a software that they can get access to, or how do they know which cases to work on and deliver that and so forth?
Right. It starts with an email or a phone call from me, and I'll tell them the project and I'll tell them the deadline. I ask them, are you able to handle this? More often than not, yeah, I can. Then what happens is I then either send certain documents, or typically they have access to my case, which is the client, the digital file. The clients know that there are contract attorneys or staff that have access to their file that may help draft the document. So they go into my case and everything's there in my notes. If they have questions, we either handle it by email, text, or phone call. And it's been pretty easy. The family law contract attorney is very experienced. So if I tell her the facts and the situation, she looks in the case, she can draft it, and then if she has any issues or questions, she sends the document to me with comments, or we talk about it, or she emails me, here are the questions, and then it's done. So we don't really, it's pretty easy with all the technology out there, you know, it's very easy to communicate with them.
Right. Okay. And so, okay, so you hired the contract lawyer to handle the cases, and you've up till now, you haven't had, because we've had other attorneys that have hired contract lawyers to, and then done mm-hmm. a handoff of an entire case where they actually become the attorney of record. For you, it's been more of a playing, and they've been working on it as an assistant role as opposed to a lawyer that's, you know, handling it from start to finish, and then you just have a split of the fees.
Right. Correct. Exactly. And it's different where I don't have these contract attorneys like taking over the case entirely. They're all my cases and mm-hmm. I'm handling them and I'll go to court. But they're really more helping me with the drafting and getting that done so we can file and get the case progressing.
Yeah. And is there a reason, I'm just curious to hear your own perspective on it. Is there a reason why you've gone more of the, you know, type of assistant role where you're having specific tasks done, but you're keeping mm-hmm. the responsibility and staying, you know, being the attorney of record contact for each client as opposed to referring yeah. it out? I mean, it makes sense to me, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, I kind of always wanted to just do my own thing. I never want to really take on a lot of employees or anything, not many. If anything, I'll just hire one. And that would be down the road, really a full-time paralegal / legal assistant. I really just kind of want to run my own show and be the attorney and take the cases I'm able to handle and get help that I need and have it run very efficiently. So that's just me, and I'm kind of a control freak. I like to handle the cases on my own and deal with it. And I guess down the road, if it really does expand to the point where I may want to consider hiring attorneys, and I've played around with the idea of expanding family law because I service other rural counties around here, and I'm finding myself kind of going to different counties. And so that might start being a challenge when I may have hearings scheduled and they're kind of in three different courthouses in 1 week. And yeah. so, you know, how to handle that down the road, you know, and I've only just reopened in November, so it has only been about 6 months. That is something I have, and I've asked around to people that I know that I would trust would be able to handle it. If, you know, what they thought of this, would you handle cases down in these counties if I needed that? And I'd you'd be the attorney of record, but, you know, it would be a case generated from my office. And they kind of said, well, maybe, but, you know, a lot of the people that I thought of already are in law firms and they don't want to yeah. leave them right now. So I think it just has to be, if I end up taking on any other, like a contract attorney for that type of structure where they're taking the case fully and they're like actually working here, then I think it would really, it's like a marriage. It really has to be someone I would really feel comfortable
yeah.
Working with, you know, and having that relationship. So I'm just kind of taking my time with figuring that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, and like you said, it's a challenge also. We had Rhonda and Jay Shree out of Oklahoma City on the podcast, and they've since opened up a Tulsa episode and so forth. And, you know, Rhonda talked a lot about how challenging it was for her to let go of the reins, because she said she's at the point yeah. now where she's got clients coming in that she's never met before. And
yeah.
you know, attorneys,
exactly.
but you know, so she's had to kind of adapt and shift. And so it's a big jump. It really is a big jump. But once she gets there, then, you know, she can, where her confidence lies in is the attorneys and the relationships that she's forged with those attorneys. And so she has a great yeah. deal of confidence in her staff and the quality of the representation that those attorneys are providing based on her experience
yeah.
with them. So that's the
right.
difference. But it certainly, and the other piece is, you know, you usually have to have a consistent stream enough business because, you know, the way we've heard mm-hmm. it structured in the past is, you know, they have their own, they actually pay for the office, they've got the equipment, all that set up, and then the attorneys just come in and do the contract work, but they're providing the
yeah.
actual space. So it's,
right.
you know, it's a big commitment and there has to be enough volume to do it.
Exactly. And I think you have to build enough to where it makes sense for the income stream to open there. And for instance, I'm looking at the idea of Columbia County servicing the Baker County Union, Columbia Stark area, because that seems to be growing quite a bit for me. And in fact, I'm in Baker County to meet with a client tomorrow. It's a little too far for them to drive all the way here to Duval to meet with me. Sometimes they do, and sometimes I just make it easy for them. But yeah, if down the road that's something to consider where I would open a satellite or separate office and have a contract attorney, I'm already thinking in that way. So it's a possibility depending on how really things develop and go.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a round two down the line here. If you end up making that step, we can have you back on. You can share the
yeah.
trials, tribulations, and successes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I'd be more than happy to talk about that.
Okay, great. So let's shift gears a little bit, and maybe we can talk about, you know, you've been practicing for many, many years. You've run a practice in the past, your own practice as well. And then, you know, day one, you're jumping into fielding, you know, the leads from a model attorney. Can you talk a little bit about how the adaptation in the way in which you've been working with the clients from the standpoint of, you know, calling leads, the initial call, how that might be different from the way you've done things in the past, and then also how you've been starting to adapt the ways in which you're working people financially to be able to fit this business model and this populace.
Right. Well, what major difference in what I've learned from what I did before and what I'm doing now, and especially with Unbundled, is that Unbundled gave you the training, kind of like the model of the coaching Graham gave me about calling the client back right away, you know, and needing the help to do that. And it's true. If you don't do that, examples like if I don't call them back that very morning, and sometimes it's hard when you're busy, you can't call them almost immediately, but I at least try to send an email, some form of communication, let them know I got it and I will be contacting them. And one time I had you get a lead, and then what I'm doing differently is you get back with them right away. You get them here. You get them to meet with you in some form or fashion. You talk about the alternatives and what makes you so unique. And that's why the script is so great, to the extent that it teaches you to explain to them why they should be considering the different services, because a lot of people come in and they a lot of them have done a lot of internet research, or they've talked to people, and they're already hesitant to even talk to a lawyer because they're like, I'm not going to be able to afford this, you know, or they think it's just out of reach, or they feel like an attorney is going to not want to call them back because they've had bad experiences, or it took a week before an attorney called them back the last two times. And so when they're pleasantly surprised that they're contacted almost immediately, that someone shows that they care, that the attorney cares, and that tries to set up a meeting and talk to them, or just talk to them on the phone right then and there at the consultation, find out what they need, what's going on, do a general assessment of their needs and the services they're looking for and what their budget is. And then already when they come in to meet with you, you already have an idea of what's going to, you know, you're gonna, how you're going to approach it, and they have already maybe documents you need for the first consultation, and then they become your client, and you establish that rapport and that comfort. A lot of them may not feel as comfortable until they actually physically meet you in person. Some hire right then and there on the phone. It's like, where's your LawPay link?
Right.
You're like,
right.
Okay. And that's great too. But at some point I know I'm going to see them, meet them. If they're in another county, I will eventually get to see them, meet them somehow. And it's always best. And so what I've done a lot different is really, really building that relationship, getting them to talk to you, get them comfortable with you, tell them what you offer that's so different from other attorneys. And already they're kind of halfway sold. They're kind of like, really? And a lot of them have commented, you know, I really like that you offer this. I've never heard of attorneys doing this. This is the first. And I've worked with three attorneys, you know, or I've talked to five, or I've done a lot of research. You're the only one I found that offers this kind of unbundled. And so they're really excited about it.
Mm. Can you talk a bit about how you convey or explain to them the types of options that you offer, and how it's, you know, what Unbundled Legal Services is, and how you can suit those services to their budget and their needs?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of go, you know, and I explain to them, you know, if they've already talked to an attorney, or a lot of them, or some of them never have, and you're the first attorney that they've ever talked to, you do gently tell them, you know, that it's not unusual that it runs in this ballpark around this much for a divorce case with kids. And then you gently tell them, like, you know, and then if they say, oh my God, I can't afford that, and they start getting upset, you know, you say, look, there are alternatives. Don't worry. You know, and you put them at ease with, like, look, there are alternatives. It's not the end of the world. You can get help. And it's, you know, not just going to come from some non-lawyer who's just a form filler, you know, and they can't give you advice. So you kind of coach them how it works in the legal system. And then you tell them the different options of how much it could cost for document preparation and coaching, or document review, or however you structure it. So I always explain that, and usually the first phone call. And then I always ask, you know, do you think any one of that would fit your budget and your needs? And almost always there's something in that range that they can handle. And if they can't, they almost always come back later because they already kind of know. And they figure, oh, at least I'll get some help. Here's what I can afford. Well, great. Let's set up the appointment, you know?
Right.
And yeah, and then they're excited. And then another tip I would say, never wait too long. I know a lot of attorneys, well, I'm, you know, they say, I can't take another appointment for another month. A lot of these clients don't want to wait that long. And waiting just a few hours, I had a client I called this week, and I couldn't call her right away that afternoon. It was after hours. I called her first thing. Like, well, I called her in the morning, and I meant to call her first thing in the morning, and I called her more like 10:30. She was like, oh, I already made an appointment with a lawyer this morning. But she made an appointment with me anyway because I kind of convinced her when I told her about my alternative. And right. So she's still meeting with that client, but that attorney isn't likely going to offer those alternative unbundled, but I do. And that's where she's like, well, I'm going to make an appointment with you then. And I don't know, sometimes they cancel and they say, I'm canceling. When can I see you? And I'll say, Thursday. Or, you know, I book a week in advance, but I can squeeze you in, you know, and here's my dates and times. What works for you? And then they feel like, okay, I don't have to wait forever to see a lawyer.
Right. Yeah, and also it really is a big differentiator because, you know, 19 out of 20, and that I think that's being generous of all the other lawyers out there, haven't embraced, you know, offering these types of options. And so it is unusual for people to hear that attorneys are willing to work on this type of, you know, what, you know, pay as you go or one task at a time type of manner. So what would be helpful, I think, is would you be open to unpacking the different types of options you offer? And I know every case is different. Obviously, you're dealing family law, you're doing immigration. I don't know if it'd be easier maybe to break them apart and just say, hey, this is kind of what I do for family law, this is what I do for immigration. Whatever you think would be easiest, but maybe we could just unpack those different types of options that you may convey. And then, you know, again, I know it varies, but roughly what the price range is for each one within a range, depending on the case and so forth.
Okay. Well, I'll give you an example for both family law and immigration law. So for instance, for family law, someone comes in, I need to divorce my spouse. And then, and it's maybe fairly uncomplicated. Maybe it's not going to be contested if they have kids and they pretty much agree on the, you know, equitable distribution of their marital assets and debt. So let's say, for example, that was the type of case. Well, you know, if that's the case, it could start around $3,000, prepare, file, go all the way through final hearing. So $3,000, I flat fee, I take a non-refundable advance fee of $500. And then a lot of them are on the payment plan, usually like $500 a month, the law pay. Some of them pay $1,000, $1,500 up front and then pay the balance. It's structured depending on the client and what they choose. The other second option for a family law case like that would be, well, let's say that's not in their budget. Well, $1,500, I prepare all of the petition and all the required documents, and that gets them 2 hours of coaching with me to get them through the process. So either it gets them through the coaching for a final hearing and kind of walk them through, okay, now you got to serve, here, you know, serve the individual, here's the instructions, those kind of things. If it ends up being where they end up scheduled for mediation, let's say if there are children involved and they end up scheduled for mediation, if they don't all agree on everything off the bat, then at least that gets coaching through that, or the $3,000 would pay through that mediation. The $1,500 pays for just the document prep and the coaching, depending on the progress in the case. Then the last option would be the $500 for 2 hours of my review, including, you know, they would draft everything. I would point them in all the typical forms because they're all available free to the public through the Florida Supreme Court has all the family law forms available to the public. You just have to tell them exactly all that what's in the packet, or often they've gone to the courthouse and they have the packet in front of them and freaked out because it was so much.
Right.
And I tell them, half of that is instructions. The rest of it are forms. Some of them you don't need. If you schedule a time with me for $500 for document review, I'll tell you everything you need to do. And then when you have it all ready, come back, meet with me, and we'll review it all, and then you're done. And then if you need another hour with me, you just pay another $250, my hourly, and then you paid a total of $750. At least you've gotten an attorney, an experienced attorney who knows family law, to help guide you through it. You know, and you have to remind them when you go to the courthouse or you go to a paralegal service, let's say, they can't give you legal advice. They're not allowed to. It would be unlicensed practice of law. So with me, they get the attorney answering their questions, reviewing, make sure everything's done correctly. And then in immigration law, same things. That could be immigration case. The traditional representation is $3,500. But if they can't afford that, then you've got that $1,500. It's around that ballpark, depending on how many forms you have to do. It can be anywhere from $1,000, $1,500 to do all the paperwork, the immigration forms, and they file it themselves. And sometimes I give them like my checklist, what I normally would give my clients, and I tell them, here are all the tips on how you file your case and how to track it. I teach them how to handle their case and track it with immigration. And then if they get overwhelmed, they can't handle it, then sometimes they go, can I just pay you the rest and you be the attorney and finish it?
Right.
And then the third option, again, is they do it all and they just want me to review it. And everything looks good, and they already know where that I tell them where you need to file it, how much is the filing fee, and those kind of things. So that's kind of how I structure it. And they have options for either immigration or family law. And I think a lot of the time they end up either it's option one, traditional full rep, or the second one is pretty popular. And then once you've established that rapport with them and you did the documents, they're ready to file, they call me and go, I don't want to, it's too much. I just want you to do it because I'm doing it. I'm doing everything you tell me, but I don't have the time. I'm too busy at work, or I've come up with the funds, you know. So sometimes that happens, but.
Yeah, we've heard that that happens, you know, quite often, actually, where folks will start working initially. And you know what? I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it really just gives people an opportunity to start working with you and to get comfortable.
Yeah.
Just like you said early on, it's just they're getting comfortable. They come in the office. They're getting more comfortable. They've had a lot of bad experiences with attorneys. They don't get callbacks. I mean, these are all, you know, and then the perception of a lawyer. So these are all things that are contributed that if you can just get started working with people, just get them in the office, start somewhere, start doing some work for them, and then they just get more and more comfortable. And then also, you know, the reality of the complexities of their case start to come up, and then, you know, people can then transition.
Yeah.
But it's just, it makes it the decision and the ability for them to move forward and keep moving forward so much easier because there aren't those, you know, big financial hurdles that a traditional firm would be charging for them to just to get started.
Exactly. So, yeah, and then some of you might do that work for them, and it was maybe just a document review, and then lo and behold, they come back and they have another issue, and it's completely a different issue or different case, and it could be an immigration case became a family case or a family case became an immigration case, you know, who knows? And so they come back, and maybe they only paid you for that service, but now they're like, well, this is what I really need. This time I really just want the full rep. I really don't think I'm comfortable doing this by myself. And you're like that, and you let them know I'm always here, you know. Or they actually tell their friends and family, oh my gosh, she offers the service. You need to call her, because then they end up they teach their friends and family there are options. So they're telling others.
Wow, it just really makes me smile, Maria, that that they're teaching others that hey, there are other options. You know, even if you've been quoted $5,000, I mean, this is the message that we're trying to resound out there on the front end as far as teaching people that, hey, even if you've been quoted $5,000, there may be other options and ways in which you can get the assistance you need one step at a time or one task at a time or work with attorneys that can offer a more realistic payment budget, you know, payment plan. So it's really it's really wonderful to hear that that's also happening organically with the clients you're speaking to as well.
And then what they're doing is my clients are telling their coworkers, friends, family, so I got two or three clients from one client. They all went to Unbundled, contacted me. I have appointments with them. Find out they all work in the same place.
Right.
And I just thought that was interesting. And I didn't outwardly ask, but they kind of hinted. They're like, yeah, I found out from a coworker. And I'm like, I can guess, you know, who it might be. Or they just blatantly tell me, I heard it from your client so-and-so. And so I went online and found you. So, yeah, they're sharing the word. It's getting out.
Yeah, well, when you're doing good work and people are able to afford it and it makes that difference, they're happy to share around with the things that are working well. So one thing I wanted to just briefly ask is on the middle option when you're doing the $1,500, do you typically take that up front or do you do it as a pay-as-you-go one step at a time? Like or do you require that? I'm just curious if you have a certain degree of flexibility if the person doesn't have the full $1,500 there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do payment plan for that. I typically like just to do a 3-month payment plan of $500 a month, because the work's going to be done likely well before the payment plan ends. So that's of course, it'd be nice if they can pay it all up front. Some do. And then some do the payment plan, and that's been fine too. So I offer that. Now, for the document review, that's usually paid all at once on the, either they, I have split it up though, depending on the client. I have split up 250, 250, but often they just say, I'll pay 500. They pay online, we schedule it, and you know, and that's that. So it's pretty easy to do, but yeah, payment plans are great.
Yeah. And it's really interesting and just, you know, seamless or just, I don't know, just beautiful in a way that each option starts with 500, you know, and then if they want, so it's like at each phase, they all start with 500. And then if they can keep making payments, they can continue to get more and more service if they want, or they can kind of stop the process. Obviously your strategy and your approach is going to be a little different if they choose an option, obviously. So they still have to choose, but financially, they're starting with 500, and if they're doing it on their own, they're going to have to do a lot of the tasks themselves. But if they want to, they can just kind of go to the next step if they need to. And it sounds like a lot of people do make that transition once they realize what they're in for.
Exactly. And so, you know, the only thing is I make sure to explain to them, like, if you choose the document preparation or document review, and then you decide you want to hire me for full representation, just know I need, and you have a hearing coming up or something and you want to call me the day before, you've got to give me some lead time because I have to prepare, you know, and some, and it's based on my availability. So they have to understand so they don't get upset. They say, I need you. But if the hearing is tomorrow, I'm already scheduled to be in another courthouse, you know, so they're aware and they are trained and they understand to give me some lead time. But but they build that trust. And another thing too is when you think about immigration and family law, it's expensive to file for divorce. In Duval County, it's $409. And it's expensive for immigration. An average I-485 adjustment fee is $1,225. That goes to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. I don't see a dime of that. That goes to the Homeland Security. That's the filing fee. So when you put them on a payment plan, the way I explain it to them is that, you know, it's unique because it's interest-free financing for your attorney's fee, so you can afford your filing fee this month because you're going to pay, the filing fee is going to reach X dollars, and then you need to budget all clients, and you have to think about, what if you were in their shoes? Would you be able to write a check for $5,000 that day for attorney's fees and the filing fees? I don't know of a lot of people who could. That's
right.
Kind of tough on a family or a single parent or an individual or a newly married couple, let's say. So, you know, I explain to them that we do the payment plan so that you're able to handle the filing fees and space out your payments. And then if they're late or something happens, you just work with them. It's only happened a few times, very seldom, because some major car repair came up or an emergency came up, someone died and they had funeral expenses. You know, we work it out and they almost always pay. So I think, you know, in life it happens to you. So imagine if an attorney was willing to work with you instead of stopping, you know, instead of closing your file and withdrawing and leaving you in a real bind and suing you for the cost, or, you know, instead of maybe giving you another few weeks to pay off that amount.
Yeah, and you're sharing something here that I think is really, really key and core, and that is just being open to having empathy for the situations that people are in and working around that and being understanding and putting yourself in their shoes and imagining what it'd be like for you to deal with that. And everything, I think, from the unbundled options to the way in which you're doing the calls, what would be the experience that you would want? Well, you'd want someone to call you back. You'd want them to listen and care, and you'd want them to be able to get you in the office as quickly as possible. And then you'd want them to work with you financially. And if you had challenges, they try to work around that. I mean, this is what everyone, this is the experience any individual would want to have. And just looking at it from that way, it seems like it just informs a lot of the way in which it is that you work with people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's something that I think I never really thought very hard about, because before I was very hard on the fees. It's this X dollars up front, or you don't, the most payment plan I'll do is 2 months. And a lot of people couldn't afford me. So I lost a lot of business that way years ago, when I could have been a little, stretch out the payment plan a little bit. And I didn't really ever, I took credit cards, not to the ease of like law pay. And that has been wonderful how easy it is to use. Clients nowadays, you know, they're consumers online too. Everyone clicks and buys, click and buy. So I think that kind of mentality has kind of morphed into the legal practice. I want to click and buy my legal service. And I would kind of feel the same way if I were to hire a lawyer and had that convenience that I can pay my bill on my mobile phone. I'm going to do it. And if I really like the lawyer, it's a great lawyer. And oh my gosh, he has a link. I pay it right there when I'm in between my work schedule. And you know, I have a lot of clients, they travel a lot. They're engineers or they're teachers or they're police officers or, you know, correction officers. All of them need the convenience. They're busy people just like me.
Yeah, and certainly the younger generation as well, as they're coming up, aren't very excited about the idea of, you know, having to print something out and then sign it and scan it. And a lot of these people, the younger generation isn't going to have these tools, you know, they're not, because it's just becoming obsolete to a certain degree, certainly the younger folks. So the easier you can make it for people to buy your products, as Bob Parsons would say from GoDaddy, more likely it is that you're able to succeed with them. So, in fact, what he says is, if you make people work harder than they have to buy your products, you're screwed. That's his actual quote.
Right. Yeah. I think you'd be mailed.
And can you talk just about when you think back to, you know, you mentioned when you used to be a little bit more rigid with your fee structure, and can you think back to the way you were thinking about it back then, and maybe what some of the hesitations you may have had, or why was that just because that was the way you were trained to do it, and that was just the traditional way of working with an attorney, and that's how it always was, or were there some concerns or fears you had around being more flexible in that, or what was it originally that prevented you from embracing this type of flexibility and this, you know, empathetic unbundled options and so forth? Maybe you didn't know about the unbundled component, but maybe even just the flexibility and the retainer. How did you, what shifted, and what would it look like before?
Well, you know, when I had my practice and I was very rigid with the fees, I think I was afraid I'd end up not getting paid and doing all this work and never getting paid for it. And then I realized, well, you know, trust goes both ways. If the client is trusting me, I should trust the client to an extent, you know, that they'll pay, you know, and of course you're going to get the client here, and I haven't had it quite yet. Where, you know, you may get that client that signs a contract and then you may not get paid. But I think that's so few and far between so far in the past 6 months. And that I think what's changed is to really put myself in their shoes and have the bills that they have and the stress that they have, and know that for the most part, they, you know, it's just they'll pay. They just need the opportunity and the chance to space it out. And then often you end up, you know, with that relationship with that client. And then what's nice is you then have that steady income each month. You know when it's coming to get paid because it's all scheduled, and you kind of can plan ahead. So if you take all your fees up front and it's like 1 month, you could have a great month. Next month could be like cricket, you know, and that's kind of what was happening in my old practice. I would take big fees that 1 month, and next month you may not be as so lucky. And so, and then, you know, and you still got all your overhead, and you want to keep overhead low to an extent, but you're going to have bills to pay, and you're going to have overhead. Yeah, so it's, I think, a great, I should have been more open to it, and I think that changed when I started to feel more empathetic and understand that the clients really were excited about it and needed it, and it's been building the business.
Right, yeah, exactly. And you know, it's almost like we want to kind of go from high here and just kind of dispel this idea. Well, you know, I don't want to do a lot of work and not get paid, and just reckon and help attorneys make the mm-hmm. almost like a leap of faith and go, you know what? If you trust them, they'll trust you, and it'll work. Like, they're going to pay, you know, like you can be flexible. You can work with folks, because so many people are getting turned away from the legal system and the support they need because of these fears. Yeah. And also the traditional training that you need to get these retainers up front, and this mentality that the bigger the retainer, the more successful you are. And this whole kind of dogma that a lot of attorneys have been influenced by. And so I appreciate you sharing that, the reality of that. The reality that it actually how it's turned out financially and with the way you've overcome that for yourself.
Yeah, I think the traditional model, you know, sometimes I get why they do it. You pay, you know, your hourly, you take the advance fee, and you put that in trust and you bill against it. I totally respect that. I get it, but that cannot work for everybody. And there's a huge population that's just never going to be in the cards for them. Or if it is, they've been, you know, hesitant to fork over another $5,000 or $10,000 again like that. you know, and then it gets them. And then sometimes you build that trust and you're on the payment plan, and then all of a sudden you just get the full payment out of the blue. They're like, I paid it. Okay. They maybe were burned before and they paid 10 grand to a lawyer who did nothing or did very little, or were, they weren't satisfied. They never got to actually talk to that lawyer. And then with you, they're like, wow, I get to talk to her. Let me just pay her.
Right. Right.
And that's kind of, it's kind of sad to see, but then, you know, at least finally they found an attorney who's willing to talk to them. I get that question. Am I going to talk to an assistant or do I talk to you? Because I want to talk to you.
We've had some lawyers that, you know, you, they say they get on the phone with the attorney and they go, okay, so yeah, I'd like to schedule to speak with Maria. No, 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 this is Maria. Oh, you're the lawyer. Oh, okay. It's almost like a shock.
Yeah. Like they're shocked when I'm on the phone. Now, you're the lawyer? I'm like, yes, I'm not the assistant. You're talking to the lawyer you'll meet tomorrow. And they're like, okay. And so when I meet with them, they're like, okay, if I hire you, is it, this is the last time I'll see you? I'm like, oh, no, no. You'll be hearing from me a lot because I'm going to have questions. I'm going to need stuff from you. My assistant may call you on occasion when we need something, but I deal with you directly. So that's how I work. And I know that can be exhausting, but I think the way I've set up my technology and how we communicate and I educate my clients early on, they know what to expect. I'm very clear with what my expectations are, and they're clear with the expectations of me. And then I clarify if it's reasonable or unreasonable, you know?
Right, exactly. Well, and I'm having trouble here because there's so many different directions we could go, but I want to be respectful of your time here. So I guess the one thing I'll touch on is just you're in a unique position where you're doing both family law and immigration. So maybe you can share anything about the differences in the types of clients that are dealing with immigration. If there's any difference in the, I don't want to say, the sales process of working with folks, because usually family law tends to be a little bit more urgent. Sometimes you have time factors that are urgent in immigration, but also, you know, they may not have the necessity where they have to move forward. Obviously, Trump has been influencing people's feeling like they need to do something now because they don't know what things are going to look like in the future. So maybe that shifted to some degree, but is there a difference in the way in which you, the process, the sales process of calling family law leads versus the immigration?
Yeah. Well, I think definitely family law, because it's court litigation. You may have deadlines coming up a lot of times. Sometimes time is of the essence, or a client, you know, is really anxious because there are problems with the time sharing and they really want to go ahead and get their case filed so they can get it heard, because it can take months to get a hearing in court. We all know that to be a reality. Especially in family law, a lot of courts are backlogged and there's so many family law cases. So I try to balance that and calendar those cases and give them a realistic deadline and tell them how long it takes. Use Westlaw ProDoc. I have samples I go by. I have a lot of, I only mentioned my case LawPay, but I also use a Westlaw ProDoc form builder. I also have my own samples of work that I've done in the past that I use. I use for immigration law. With immigration law, kind of similar with Trump, all the new policies and changes that can be daily. We have to really keep up with the changes and the updates. So I'm a member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association that sends out those notices and helps with keeping up with all those updates. And clients sometimes in immigration, because they're worried and concerned and want to file right away, we have to try to turn around and get those filed as soon as we can, especially for some particular clients that we may be concerned we need to file for their release now before it becomes a real problem. You really have to use a case management software that I use my phone for all my dates and my tasks and my responsibilities so that no case kind of falls through the crack and I forget a deadline. It's important to kind of really keep on top of that.
Do you use Google Calendar or what do you use to keep track of your dates and calendar stuff on your phone?
Yeah, I use, oh gosh, what is it? It's on my iPhone and the regular Microsoft, but it's synced to my, it just goes with me everywhere. And so I haven't been using the calendar in my case. I primarily use the calendar that's in my iPhone that kind of goes with me everywhere I go. I check it every day, every night, every morning, and all my appointments are in there, and the tasks are through my case, or I put that in my calendar every day, and I plan out my weeks and my months in advance, too. So I'm used to doing that for years. So it's a habit for me to kind of keep up with that. And I think it's important where it's a lot of it's automated and send you ticklers and reminders. Because, you know, it's easy to forget, you know, when you're so busy. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you for, at least for today, at least until we do the round two and you've expanded to cover the entire state of Florida, is you mentioned international adoptions. And that's not something we've talked about a lot on the podcast yet. I would say we have, it's the minority. It's a little bit less than the majority of attorneys do adoptions that are within our network doing family law. And from what I've heard, these are good cases. There tends to be it's a specialty to a certain degree. But could you talk about the adoption cases? So we haven't been promoting that up till now very much, but it's something that we could start promoting. And we'd have to do it region by region, perhaps, because some lawyers do it, some lawyers don't. So maybe could you talk about the why you do adoptions, maybe the business side of it as well, so that attorneys that haven't been doing this that may want to consider doing this area of law in their own region.
Why does you do that?
Well, it started out because with immigration law, some clients ended up adopting relatives or a particular child that typically was a relative, and their parents deceased, or for whatever reason, or they abandoned the child, but they happened to be born in another country and not born to any U.S. citizen parents. And then my client comes in who lives here or in the state of Florida or somewhere, you know, with needing to go the adoption route. And it's very complex because you have to comply with the state law, you know, then you have to comply with that country law, the child's country of birth or of nationality. And then you have to comply with U.S. federal laws, immigration laws. And so I got into it from my clients, and I ended up, a very good friend of mine does adoption, readoption work, and adopted his own children from China. And we kind of just started doing some of that work and getting very familiar with it. And I haven't been doing many of those. It's very costly to adopt a child from overseas. And because you typically have to hire an adoption attorney, and then the immigration attorney, and then you have to work with an adoption agency sometimes, and it depends if the country is a Hague country or non-Hague country. There are a lot of different requirements depending on a lot of factors and a lot of facts. So I kind of got into it from friends and from clients and loved it because, and I had friends that adopted that are lawyers, and that the need was there. Now, it's not something that you often see, and there are certainly lawyers who do this a lot and work directly with adoption agencies. So that's another way of getting into that. But it is very complicated, and I had a very complicated one. I had to fight with immigration, and they didn't agree with our case, and it was a real uphill battle. And then we thought of appealing it, but we decided to try a different route. And so, you know, it's difficult when they come in after trying to represent themselves and then they come to you to fix it. Those are the hardest.
Right.
So, yeah, kind of got into it from just doing immigration and family law.
Oops, lost you again there.
Right. Sorry.
There we go. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say it was just a topic, and I used to write as a columnist in an Asian publication, and that was a question I got quite a bit. How can I adopt so-and-so in the country of Philippines or, Russia or China? So.
And do you do local adoptions as well? Like if clients just come in and say they want to adopt a child here in Florida or Jacksonville area, is that something you do?
No, I haven't. No, I don't. I don't handle any really local domestic adoptions. It's more the international, more the immigration side of it.
Right. And that's sourced from clients that are, doing the immigration and want to do that involving multiple countries. It's kind of a specialty.
Yeah. And there's special trainings on that. And I'll be going to the AILA conference, and there are the adoption experts doing their presentation in New Orleans, as well as other immigration topics. But there are a lot of related issues. Family law and immigration law is unique because family law is a matter of state law, and immigration law, you know, is all federal. And there are very few attorneys that can handle both, because there are some issues that pop up for those who are divorcing, and then they've got an immigration situation. So right. I can handle both.
Yeah, they're very complimentary in that way. Okay, well, you know, Maria, I really want to thank you again for taking the time to just unpack this, you know, story, this, you know, this process of, you know, growth and the ways in which you've been working with clients in the last 6 months. And I'm really certainly excited about the rest of the year and what's to come. We certainly appreciate all the work you're doing for these folks that otherwise may not have been able to get it elsewhere. And that's what this is really all about. So I just thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, well, I thank you guys for helping me with all this and getting my eyes open to these possibilities. So I think my business would not have been successful without you all. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're happy to support you in any way we can. That's what this is all about. So, and I certainly appreciate you taking the time to share what's been working well. So with that, we will go ahead and wrap up this episode. For everyone out there that's listening, we certainly appreciate so much your participation in the show and for sharing it to those other attorneys that you know that may be able to benefit from learning about unbundled services and payment plans and contract lawyers and technology. It's certainly an evolving industry. It's happening really fast. So it's important to be able to stay on the pulse of everything that's going on. So thanks for sharing the show and sharing with everyone else. And we will certainly see you all on the next episode. Thanks so much. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.